Back to My Garden, episode 76.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
For landscape and garden designers only, free report reveals how to double your garden design business in 12 months or less. Discover 10 ways to attract better clients while reducing costs. Escape the day-to-day grind of doing all the work yourself. You get instant access at www.backtomygarden.com/GD Top Secret. Are you concerned about toxic chemicals, GMOs, and frankenfood? Don't panic. Grow organic. Discover my new resource for organic gardening. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/myorganic. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another episode of Back to My Garden. Fantastic guest for you today, folks. Greg is a passionate backyard farmer and author of the DIY Backyard Farm Edible Garden Planning Guide. Greg's blog is brilliant and great for helping children learn about eating healthy, fresh foods. Greg and his family grow real food in a real garden in their property in New Jersey. We have a ton to discuss today. So without any further ado, I want to welcome Greg Carbone to the show. Hi, Greg.
Dave, thank you for the flattering introduction.
I am so excited that you're here.
Well, thanks again for having me.
Give you a little intro, but I want to get to know you better. And I know our listeners definitely want to hear your stories. Greg, take a minute or two. Take us a bit through your background and how did you get into gardening?
That's a great question, Dave, and that's something I'm excited to share with everyone who will listen. For me, it's always been about just having my own little piece of dirt and having wonderful family members that gave me the tools I needed to grow things. So from a very early age, I was introduced to backyard edible gardening. And I say the word edible because, first, it's a lot easier than saying fruits, vegetables, and herbs over and over again. But I also see that it is certainly a emerging term to describe growing your own food. So edible gardening has been in my blood since about the time I could walk. I was able to start growing my own food, sometimes successfully and sometimes unsuccessfully. And it, from there, it snowballed throughout my life, and it's been a common theme. A lot of it has to do with watching my family members and virtually every person I grew up around growing something in their yards that was for their table.
Outstanding. Giving us a lot to start with here, Greg. That's good. For those of you driving, Greg and I are going to kick back and talk about gardening for a half hour. Please don't take notes if you're driving. It's just unsafe. I'll take all the notes. I'm going to have all the links, resources that Greg shares up on the blog at Back to My Garden. Greg, was there a certain individual that got you started at an early age? Did you have like a gardening role model? I always refer to it like a Yoda or Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I did, and I still do. So my great aunt, who's not here anymore, her name was Georgette, was the lady that walked around the yard and talked to her plants and checked them out like they were her children. She wasn't crazy, though. She just had a passion for growing things, both ornamental as well as edible. And she was my Yoda, for sure. My you know, Jedi master of the garden. And also the person responsible for giving me my first 2-foot by 3-foot little piece of dirt and any seeds I could possibly want. So she always provided encouragement. For her, she was around for 92 years, and as long as I knew her, she was always talking with me about gardening. So she was my main influence. But as I said, virtually everyone in my life that was in my family or friends, you know, my family's friends, they all seemed to grow things. And some of that had to do with my Italian heritage, and some of it had to do with the time period. Because at the time of my grandparents, people that experienced the Great Depression, they didn't have a choice. They grew their own food because they needed to. And they learned to sustain themselves from within their own property. And I feel that that's something that has been lost for a long time and is starting to emerge again. So it sort of skips some generations. But here we are again with a huge renewed interest in growing your own.
It is. We're at the cool time. I mean, this thing is going to get bigger and bigger, right? Like people are only, they don't even know where food comes from half the time.
Absolutely. And that's part of the catalyst, is the concern over exactly where my foods come from. We're in a global society now, for better and for worse. And part of the worst side of that is you don't know the growing practices of the people growing your foods. And you also may not even know where the foods you're eating are coming from, because if it's a food that's been prepared or processed, many times a lot of those ingredients are not listed on the label as far as their origins are concerned. So certainly a lot of just food safety brings a lot of concern, and people start to grow their own for that reason. But there's so many other things at play here that are really bringing to forefront this edible gardening movement. And part of it's also, it's trendy. I'll be honest with you. It's very trendy.
It's trendy and growing. And maybe it's just, I'm so immersed in the culture now, but you start to have conversations like, why does your tomato taste different than this tomato I got at the store? And like, until you've grown your own, you've never really tasted a tomato, have you?
Absolutely. And I witness that every single day, even in the dead of winter like we are now. People see our garden and they want to know, how can they get started? How did you do this? And that's the reason why I started a blog and then wrote a book and continue to talk to anyone who will listen about growing their own food.
For those of you on the interwebs, make sure you follow Greg on social media, on Twitter at DIY Edible Garden, spelled just like it sounds. Greg's got an awesome blog. Make sure you bookmark it, share his stuff. It's at DIYBackyardFarm.com. That is an awesome URL. It's a real conceptual idea you have. I mean, farming is not limited by how many hundreds of acres you have. Talk us a little bit about your book, your blog, and talk to us about your garden.
Yeah, so the garden is not unlike what many people have. So just because I wrote a book and have a blog and basically talk about this stuff all day long, it doesn't mean I have this monstrous piece of land. And I'd like everybody that's listening to really envision a normal backyard garden that I happen to call a farm, because I believe a farm is a place where you are able to grow things that you can eat and also receive some kind of valuable benefit from it. And most people think, well, a farm is where you grow things to sell. And I differ there. So I'm okay calling what we have a backyard farm, because the value we get is from the health and the sharing and the community that's built around it. I can't tell you how many people we've met because of our backyard farm. So the backyard farm's filled with a variety of, all your greatest hits from the edible gardens, as well as a few experimental crops each year. And our garden is a mix of raised beds, traditional row planting, and even various types of creative containers, all owned and farmed by the four members of our household, myself being one of them, and my 7 and 8 year old kids being two of the others. My wife kind of oversees and helps out as well, but it's really a fabulous place where we all spend time together, much like you would see a lot of families in America and elsewhere, sitting around a TV, spending time together. Well, we sit around and walk around the garden together.
Wow. This is never going to fit into one show because you got so much variety. Where to start? Okay. I don't want to assume anything, and I'm obviously prejudiced, but being Italian, I have to assume you grow tomatoes.
We do.
How was your season for your tomatoes?
This was a very good plus year. It's not quite excellent, but a little better than very good. And we've got a tomato shark in our house. That's his nickname, my 8-year-old son. He grows nothing but tomatoes, and I do convince him to mix a little lettuce in as a companion plant throughout the year because he loves salad so much. But we did have a very good plus tomato year, and I think it was basically highlighted by a couple of heirloom varieties that just really stood out this year, and you know, one of those being the Black Crim and the Cherokee Purple would be another, where the tomatoes were just so good yet short-lived that you know, for a month or two they really blew our minds.
Yeah, so you're in Jersey, New Jersey, so you have a real hot summer, but you get all the seasons, right?
We get full seasons here. It wasn't your typical really hot summer. We only had about a week of hot weather, which is why we didn't have an excellent tomato year. Mm-hmm. The crop came all at once, Dave, and that is sometimes a challenge.
Oh, I know. You're having like a chopped up tomato and scrambled eggs and then a tomato sandwich. And yeah, it's creative how you can eat your tomatoes. Do you do
Absolutely.
Any canning?
Very little, but it's an emerging interest in the household. It's a matter of having the time, but we certainly are interested in it, and it's probably our next step in food preservation. We mainly preserve our herbs at this point.
An older couple friend of mine, the Di Marias, they're from Sicily, I guess originally. They do 600 jars of homemade tomato sauce.
Oh, it's outstanding.
Yeah. They're like, you know, just a human factory come the end of summer. But
there's nothing like that, because every time you open one of those jars in the dead of winter or some other time of year, it's just a little throwback to the sunshine on your skin and the nice cool breezes of summer. It's a wonderful way to re-experience the season.
Greg, you hinted there at the word herbs. What's that like for you? What are you growing?
So, yeah, that's one of my favorite things, because I find herbs, or herbs, depending on where you're from, to be both beneficial in terms of a culinary plant to grow, but also beneficial because they many times attract beneficial insects. So we grow a variety, but it's the herb garden is highlighted by wonderful bushes of rosemary and oregano. The oregano specifically comes from a part of Sicily where my wife's grandfather's from, and we've had that oregano growing for many years and moved it from house to house with us. We also, of course, have basil and cilantro and parsley and you know, all the most popular herbs, as well as a couple of experimentals each year. Like this year, sorrel was a very nice addition and something we will certainly be adding into the playlist for each of our years to come.
You experimented with sorrel. Is that two R's? Heck, I have to take notes here for everybody. S-O-R-R-E-L.
Yep.
What do you use, like soups and stews? How do you cook with that?
Even salads.
Salads.
Yeah, it was a very interesting herb that I just happened to pick up at a local garden center.
I love how you phrase it as experimental, too. It's almost like they're auditioning to get into the...
That's the perfect word, because that's how I describe it to people. Not to overwhelm yourself. When you go to a garden center and you're planting your garden, there's just all these plants calling out to you, grow me, grow me. And before you know it, you come home with cartloads of stuff that, first of all, don't fit in your garden, and second of all, are just too hard to manage, because you have to know each of the plants you're growing almost as well as a best friend or a family member, because there's so many nuances to growing really great food. Anyone can grow food. It's not hard. But to grow really great tomatoes or fantastic peppers that just crunch in your mouth, you really have to know a lot about them. And I encourage people to pick like 8 to 10 or 12 max plants to grow. And then each year add one or two. We add one herb and you know, one vegetable every year to see if we do want to bring it into the regular rotation. For example, this year I saw a tomatillo plant in a local garden center, and it called out to me, grow me. So I did. And my son was all about it, because he's the tomato guy, and these things looked like tomatoes to him. So perfect example of the reason why you need to know your plants. Having never grown tomatillos before, we didn't know we needed another one, because tomatillos will not self-pollinate. So a week after planting it, I was reading up and researching, and there it was in black and white. You need more than one. So we ran out and had to find another one, but by then the garden center had sold out. So it was this chase to find a local tomatillo plant. So perfect example of first experimenting with a new plant, and second, doing your research, preferably before you go out and buy one.
Wow, that's a $100 tip right there, folks. Tomatillos, buy them in pairs.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask you shared how your tomatoes were, above average summer for your tomatoes. What caught you off guard, or were there any frustrations in the garden this year?
Oh, absolutely. We struggled with another cold spring, which is always frustrating because part of me, as experienced as I've been in growing, part of me every year just wants to get things moving in the right direction. And the first hint of warmth, my gut always tells me, there'll be some cold weather coming our way. Don't jump too fast. But part of me also wants to get out there and garden. So that was one thing. It was just a slow start. So I remember in March and early April here in New Jersey, we still had a couple of frosts that were devastating to some seedlings that I rushed out into the garden. And even in May, after planting the first grouping of some tomatoes, I had my regrets that I should have waited another week to the traditional Mother's Day planting, which many old school gardeners, tomato gardeners, adhere to like a golden rule. So that's one. And the second thing we really struggled with this year, more than any year before, were chipmunks. Just loads and loads of chipmunks this year. They must have had a very busy spring. And that's always a struggle because they're cute and they're fun and you like having them around, or at least we like having them around the yard. But they do their damage, and they take, the angel's share or the chipmunk's share of the tomatoes until you get a little more aggressive and start to control their ability to get to those tomatoes a little bit better.
Attack of the chipmunks. Dun dun dun. You mentioned your seedlings. Do you get them started in your basement or a windowsill? What do you like in the spring? How's your plan go?
Yes, so we do start some of our plants depending on the availability of the live plant in our area and also the types of seeds we have. There are certain heirloom seeds that are true family heirlooms that go beyond the traditional heirloom definition. And some of the tomatoes that we grow and some of the peppers and beans have been around for so long in our family that I have to grow those from seed for tradition and to ensure that I keep that strain going. And other plants just grow better from seed. So certain things I do grow in the basement with grow lights. Very little on our windowsill because while our garden gets incredible amounts of sun, our home doesn't, which I guess is ideal from a heating and cooling standpoint. Someday I'd love to have a greenhouse where I'd be able to get the seeds started. But yeah, each spring the basement is a busy place where my children, while I'm not home, are spraying the plants and making sure that the air is circulating and then, keeping an eye on things. And in the evenings, I'll be down there just dreaming about my garden and taking care of things.
For those of you listening playing the home game, make sure you follow Greg on Twitter at DIY Edible Garden and go to his blog at www.diybackyardfarm.com. Greg's book is up there as well. Is your book on Amazon yet?
Yes, it
Okay,
is.
good, good. I'll put a link on the blog to the Amazon.
Well, thank you.
Heirloom seeds, folks, did you hear that? He's got multi-generational family-specific heirloom seeds. I mean, it's so important to keep these strains alive, isn't it?
Absolutely. And until recently, Dave, some of the seeds and plants were just hard to come by. So there's one in particular that your listeners might be interested in. It's called kakutsa, also known as gagoots here in America. There's a lot of ways to say it. It's CACUZZA, kakutsa. And that particular plant, first of all, if you ever even mentioned the name, even just 5 or 7 years ago, no one would even have heard of it unless they came from Italy. And finding the actual produce or even the plant would be nearly impossible. So I had to keep those seeds going. And now that has caught on, that plant has caught on, the kakutsa, a little bit more. So you do see it in stores occasionally or farmers markets. They also call it snake squash here in America. It's a very long, if you could imagine a 5, sometimes 6 foot long squash.
What?
Absolutely, yeah. And that you can see that on my website, as well as some fun videos that highlight some of the growing fun you will have when you decide to plant kakutsa. Oh, and yes, you need a lot of room to grow them. It's kind of like growing pumpkins.
This is one of my favorite parts of gardening, is the secret society, you know, sharing seeds, sharing wisdom. It's just so much fun.
Oh, yes, and it is fun to see with certain plants like pumpkins and some of those prize plants that people grow, where they don't even just grow them because they want to eat them, but they grow them because they grow so impressively. The kakutsa is responsible for architectural design in the garden. There are many people that devote themselves to growing this particular squash so deeply that they build their own specialized pergolas and trellises to hang them to maximize the output of the plant, as well as enhance the way the squash produces itself. Because it's a very long squash, you could imagine that you don't want to let it hit the ground, because if it hits the ground, it curls up. So folks build these huge trellises to make sure that they get enough elevation to have a nice, long, straight squash. And the reason they do that is because the main way to prepare the squash is to skin it and chop it up into a very small dice. And they make a wonderful sauce, a very simple sauce made with fresh tomatoes, basil, very finely minced onion, and the kakutsa, of course. And it's basically just sautéed for a very long time and served very simply with a pasta and some fresh herbs. So you want to have minimal seeds when you do that, when you grow this squash. And one of the ways to ensure that is to first pick it young enough, but also make sure that it doesn't grow very fat or curly. So as I was saying, people build specialized structures just to grow it. And it's such a kick to watch all of the effort and love that goes into doing this.
Man, this is true wisdom, folks. You can't get this, you know, at the library or in a book. This, you got to go right to the source. This is good.
All I hope it does is get people to say, I want to look that up or learn a little more, because it's, once you see how interesting it is, especially if you have children, once you see how interesting it is to grow something like that, or even just to grow a simple tomato plant in a container on your back patio or on your balcony if you're in an apartment and you're allowed to, once you see how easy it is, you'll want to do it. And that's my goal, is to get people growing things, growing their own food, experiencing nature, and connecting in a way that for years many of us lost, including myself. There are 3 years of my life where I just couldn't garden. I lived in a townhouse and there were strict rules against it. And not only was I beginning to lose my mind because I wasn't growing anything, I was starting to lose the connection with nature and starting to forget where my foods come from. I noticed on some shopping trips going and buying produce in the grocery store and not even thinking about a farm or thinking about where this food was grown or who touched it. I just viewed them as simple commodities, and commodities that happened to be part of my daily meal preparation. And that was sad. And all of that ended again when I started to grow my food.
Outstanding. Let's take a minute to thank our sponsors and then come back and play 5 quick questions. Attention, garden lovers. Do you want to save time, save money, and have your most amazing garden ever? Receive free tips, strategies, and gardening techniques from passionate gardeners around the world. Join the VIP club for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP. What's the hottest trend in gardening? I think the hottest trend is aquaponics. Can you really grow a massive garden powered by fish? Find out more and discover the secrets to building fish-powered gardens. Download the free report today at www.backtomygarden.com/fish. You know, Greg, I glanced at the clock and our time's flying by, and now's the time in the show where we play a game called 5 Quick Questions. This is your chance to share your wisdom and experience with brand new rookie gardeners. Are you ready to play?
Absolutely.
I'm changing it up on you too, so there's no one's ever heard these questions before. My mom said, why don't you change the questions? So for my mom listening in Edmonton, here you go. Question number 1. Greg, what's the best tip you can give a parent to encourage them to get their child to eat vegetables?
Great question. And hello, mom in Edmonton. So the best tip comes from my own house. Just let them be involved in the process of selecting what they want to grow. Show them pictures. This is the perfect time of year, as we record this in December to look through some seed catalogs that are just coming out now for 2015 and let them see the beautiful, vibrant colors and the pictures. And when the seeds come, show them the seeds. Let them touch the seeds. Let them be involved. Of course, supervise them, especially if there's tools around or anything dangerous. But let them be involved in the daily care of growing a seed and turning it into a plant that will bear some kind of food. And make sure that whatever seeds they are, try to steer them towards things that grow faster. So snap peas in the spring. Believe it or not, radishes all year long, or lettuces, things that can have a quick growing cycle. Not every kid will like to eat a radish. You'd be surprised that they do, but you want to grow things that grow quickly and interesting and then show movement. Not a good time to grow a pumpkin.
They have no patience. I remember being a kid, eating peas, like cleaning the peas and opening them up and eating them. That was just fantastic times.
Absolutely.
Question number two. What is either the best or worst gardening advice that you've ever heard?
Yeah, that's a good one. So the world is filled with good and bad gardening advice. And the best advice I ever got, I guess it becomes a primacy and recency thing. So recently I was reading an article in Organic Gardening Magazine around a way to trellis tomatoes called a cat's cradle. And this year, it was a very transformative year as far as trellising the tomatoes were concerned. It was easier. It was enjoyable. The kids liked to help with it. That was really great gardening advice. So, again, the recency effect tells me that that was one of the best things I've learned. And some of the worst ones I've learned is just, you know, people telling you to do things in your garden, like, you know, throw eggshells in your garden. Well, it's not quite that easy. But people will say, hey, just throw some eggshells in the garden. It adds calcium to the ground. And that's a good example of some really bad advice I got, because the eggshells take a really long time to add the calcium to the garden. And when you're growing things like broccoli or other brassicas, they suck a lot of the calcium from your soil. And if you're throwing eggshells in, hoping you're going to instantly just boost up the calcium, it's not quite that way. And a lot of times you get advice from a really good grower, somebody that lives next door to you and they've been growing things for 70 years. You know, you believe it. Well, if they say it, then it must be true. So that's some examples of some, I don't want to say bad gardening advice, but not so helpful gardening advice.
Yeah. Situational dependent.
Yes, they kept the slugs away, though, because slugs don't like to crawl across eggshells. So.
Oh, that's a good tip. Oh, for all my friends in England getting invaded by slugs, there you go. That's good. Okay, number three. Make sure everybody goes to DIYBackyardFarm.com. We love to share good resource websites. Do you have one or two websites you use, Greg, or a favorite blog about gardening?
Yeah, I really enjoy Grits. Of course, Back to My Garden.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
It goes without saying that people listening to the show, and that's actually how I was introduced to Dave, through his blog. And his notoriety in the gardening circles, especially on Garden Chat. But I also happen to enjoy Grit Magazine, or grit.com, and I do blog for them as well as a guest blogger. What I enjoy about it is you get a variety. You get homesteaders and people sharing, like, for example, preserving advice, which really got me into thinking, well, I got to start preserving because there's a whole other side of gardening here that I'm not doing. And that particular site just offers a lot of timely information, both on growing, but also preparing different types of foods that you're growing. So I find it really cool and engaging. And it's I got to warn you, it's very immersive. So there's so many different blogs on there that before you know it, you can spend an hour or two reading about different types of gardening.
Nice. Grits.com. Good, good, good. They've been around a while, haven't they?
Yes, Grit has been around. It started, I believe, as a print publication, and of course went online.
I remember that. Yeah, as a kid, I remember Grit.
Yes.
Okay, good, good. Book. Do you have any gardening books in your library, a favorite you could recommend to the listeners?
There are so many, and that's one of the things I would warn people of, is that, you know, there's a lot of books you could get. And the reason why I wrote a book was because I wanted to give people the very basic advice of how to get started in backyard edible gardening without getting too bogged down. So many of the books I read were very informative and very well written, but they weren't actionable. They didn't offer a way to plan my garden or start a garden or give me that desire after I was done reading it to even go out and garden, because I kind of felt almost exhausted, like, okay, I learned a lot, but I'm really not motivated to go out and do it. But one of the books that I really like, and you might be surprised because it's, you know, somewhat generic in the title, but Organic Gardening for Dummies. I believe it's by Whitman. And the book is cool because it's written in a way that you can use it as a reference tool. And you don't have to read it all at once. And it was one of the first books that I read on my own about edible gardening, and in particular, organic gardening. Because up until about 10 years ago, I hadn't read a single book on it. It was more just things I learned passed down to me through generations. And that would be one book that I could tell you, you know, despite the title and, despite being from a series of many, many books, the author did a fantastic job of organizing and making actionable information.
Awesome. Now, for all the listeners, I'm going to have a link up to Greg's book, The DIY Backyard Farm Edible Garden Planning Guide, up on Back to My Garden. I'd encourage you, pick up a copy. It's a good enabler device. So if you have a friend that's been resistant or hesitant or just getting into gardening, you get to be their Obi-Wan and Yoda. Give them Greg's book.
Well, thank you.
Question five, last question, Greg, and this is like look into the future. There's no right or wrong answer. Is there anything that you've been itching to just try that you've never grown before that you might actually play around with next season?
Well, that's a tough one because I thought I had the answer. And then when you said next season, I have to change my mind.
So it can be different.
Originally, I was going to say corn because I've learned the hard way that you really need a lot of space to grow good corn, because you need to be able to plant it in a block so it'll pollinate well and get full pollination, so you don't have like I've grown in the past, a husk filled with some really good-looking kernels but really dominated by some bad-looking or non-existent kernels. So I always wanted to have a big piece of land where I could grow corn and just give it away on the roadside, heirloom corn, because most of the corn that we get in store is a hybrid that's been basically hopped up on sugar. Mm-hmm. And while it tastes fantastic and like candy, there are some heirloom corns that also taste very good, but they're not so high in sugar. And that's something I always wanted to do, is just be able to just bring back some of those varieties like Silver Queen and get people introduced to them. But since I don't have that land in my foreseeable future, and my wife will not let me take out the entire front yard, which I would love to do, she thinks we need grass for the kids. I don't know. It's a crazy concept. So, barring that, I really have to get into growing different kinds of berries, because when you have kids, there's nothing more engaging for the kids and the birds than growing berries. I find it, I'll get home from work and I pull into the driveway and I'll see the kids just scrambling through our berry bushes, going crazy, picking berries. And it warms my heart because they could be inside eating fruit roll-ups or some other, processed food. And I don't want to sound like I'm up on the soapbox, but it's just very fulfilling to see my kids wanting to go out and do something healthy and play in the yard and eat berries from the bushes that they help tend to. So growing more berries is going to be in our future.
Wow, wow, wow. Raspberries or something exotic?
We're already growing many different kinds of raspberries. Our favorite are the golden raspberries because not only do they taste good, it's a kind of a cool thing to grow, because if you could even find them in the store, at least here in New Jersey, it might be different maybe in California, but here in New Jersey, if you find golden raspberries, they're usually between $6 and $8 for a half pint. And this season, we didn't really keep track, super track of this, but we had estimated 11 half pints of these golden raspberries. So you do the math. Not only do they taste great, and they're fun to pick, and they're fun to watch grow, but my goodness, can they save you a lot of money. Because I personally could never afford to buy 11 pints or justify buying 11 pints, half pints of golden raspberries, no matter how much we like them.
Do the math, folks. Golden raspberries are worth more than oil. I wonder if probably most seed catalogs would get those.
Oh, yes. And that's where we got started locally. I like to buy as much as I can from my local garden centers. I'm really big on keeping my money local. However, there are some fantastic seed catalogs out there, like Seed Savers Exchange. It's one of my favorites. And the seed catalogs do something else. They help get you through the winter. There's nothing more inspiring than looking through seed catalogs in December and January and sitting down to plan your gardens, your edible gardens, with your family.
Wow. Fantastic stuff, folks. Make sure you follow Greg on Twitter at DIY Edible Garden. And check out his book and blog at www.diybackyardfarm.com. Send him an email. Tell him how much you enjoyed this interview. Who knows? He might hook you up with some kakuza.
Thank you, Dave.
Greg, the time has flown by. You've been a brilliant guest. Got to have you back. You're on the VIP list for now, for sure, man. That was awesome. I want to give you the last word today to the listeners. We got people in about 30 countries listening. Can you leave them with either a pearl of wisdom or a note of encouragement on their gardening adventures?
I'll do both. Anyone can grow their own food. Remember, Mother Nature does all the work. We just tend. We're shepherds that tend to the flock. And Mother Nature does the rest. So start small. And most importantly, here's the pearl. And it's not a pearl onion. It's plan your garden and then garden your plan.
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's the quote of the week. That's going up on the blog, folks. It'll be up at backtomygarden.com/76. Greg, you've been amazing. Thank you for being on the show today. And we'll have you back.
The pleasure has been mine.